Welcome to the Speak and Get What You Want podcast, where you learn how to communicate like the world's greatest leaders. Welcome to the Speak and Get What You Want podcast. I am here with an incredible guest today. Super excited about this because he's not only one of the most sought after speakers on the specific subject we're going to talk about today, but he also happens to be my brother. And so love spending this time with you, Larry Kirby. Excited to be with you and really excited to jump into the subject that we're going to talk about today. Larry has a company called Parenting.Rocks, and he teaches parents how to communicate with their children, which I find fascinating because the reality is this. As a parent, if you can effectively communicate to a child, you can effectively communicate anywhere in your life. You know, it's that saying that so many of us have heard, how you do anything is how you do everything. And so excited to learn from you today, Larry. It's good to be with you.
Hey, Chad, it's good to be with you too. Nice to see someone else that spells the last name K-E-R-B-Y. Hey, right. Obviously I've been a big fan of Chad all of his life, whether it was him taking care of me or me being able to actually follow his professional journey and his work, and way excited with the publication of the work you'd already been doing for a while and I've been following you, but to see it in book form is quite an accomplishment. That's huge.
Well, it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun. And you and I both believe strongly in the importance of communication and how you communicate. But one of the things that we fail to talk about, and we're going to talk about it here in today's episode, is the importance of emotional ownership. In fact, you have a curriculum that you teach on emotional ownership and how much emotional ownership impacts the words you say and your communication. Because people, Larry, when they're not in the right space, they say things they don't mean. They communicate in ways that's not consistent with who they are. And so I just want to start by asking the question, what made you jump into this subject to becoming an absolute expert in emotional ownership?
You know, it's been a journey, but the bottom line is this: emotions are ruining relationships. Emotions are ruining relationships in the workforce. They are ruining relationships in the home. They are ruining relationships among couples. And it's not new. In matter of fact, I believe our ability to react with everything going on in our world at the moment is actually worse, but it doesn't have to be. And there's some simple principles of communication and of an understanding that can help dramatically in a relationship between a spouse, between your children. And so my journey started in working with kids. My journey started when my sweet wife gave birth to one of the most strong-willed kids I've ever seen in my life, which I am so grateful for. It's those kids that are so well-behaved that give us a sense of our skills as a parent. And so I'm so grateful that our first kid came in really strong-willed, and it forced my wife and I to learn new tools. And so our journey in learning how to thrive with strong-willed kids has taken us to a path of teaching other parents different tools and techniques. But what kept coming back for us is these are great tools and techniques that you're teaching, but when I am angry, they don't work. And so that was kind of that is what launched my sweet wife and I into this journey of, okay, it's more than knowing how to thrive with your kids. It's how do I be in an emotional state? Because something that you spoke, that you shared multiple times in your book, and that is, you know, people match your energy in 3 minutes or less. Well, you come in yelling at your kids, it's going to be a whole lot less than 3 minutes. I mean, that's about 3 seconds. I remember a time where I came in at 10 o'clock. My kids were young. They were watching TV. None of the work had been done. None of their contributions had been done. I just came in like, what is going on? Just this intensity. Well, our natural response is when someone comes into our life with intensity because of mirror neurons. And by the way, that statement you gave, there's so much science in just that simple phrase. But within seconds, my kids are going to get defensive. And I see it in the workplace. I see it in sales. I see it in small businesses. I see it in customer service. And in most customer service organizations don't know how to thrive with someone who's emotionally dysregulated. And they take offense to it, which is understandable if you have not developed the skills in the understanding of where our emotions come from, what amplifies our emotions, and just the very basics of why am I experiencing this emotion and how to process this emotion.
Right. Right. And you know, as you're saying that, Larry, I don't think there's any better comparison to an entrepreneur or business owner to their business than a parent to their child, right? Because as you were sharing that experience, walking into your children and seeing them sitting there at 10 o'clock, none of what expectations, none of the contributions were done, and you were very frustrated, my mind reflected on how many times I've seen entrepreneurs do the same thing. Business leaders do the same thing, where they come in and they react with that high level of emotion and communicate things. You know, I'm currently working very closely with a law firm right now where the law firm owner views this business as his family. I mean, he's very, very, very successful, doing millions and millions of dollars a year, but he told me when we were meeting a couple of weeks ago, he said, Chad, this is my family. I didn't have kids so I could have this business. I didn't get married so I could have this business, you know? And so he sometimes will react in a similar way that you're talking about right now. So when, Larry, when those emotions are high and you want to communicate certain things, how do you own those emotions so that you don't say something you really don't want to say?
Well, and even before in parenting, in that moment, in moment of dysregulation, what do I teach parents? We delay the consequence. What does that look like? Dude, I am so angry that you just hit your brother. I don't even want to talk about it right now. Let's talk about it later. And sometimes I might throw in like, try not to worry, you know, it's parents. It's not that we don't get angry. It's we don't discipline while we're angry. In the workforce, It's identifying, wow, when you said that, I got really defensive. I don't know why. Let me sit with this a moment. Let me go calm down for a second, and then let's finish this conversation. Or being able to distinguish the difference between feeling angry and acting angry. I can feel angry, but not have to act angry. And going back to that situation where if I look at my workplace as my family that I've created, I'm going to take it personal when certain things are done. And so, you know, this big push right now of meditating, this big push of taking deep breaths, which I love, by the way. I love box breathing. But a lot of these things are more of the prevention. And then the box breathing is after it's happening. What I want to focus on with my clients is going back to the very basics of why you're even angry in the first place. You have an event, something that happens. And a lot of times we've been conditioned to think when something happens, it triggers our emotions. But Viktor Frankl taught us between stimulus and response, you have freedom to choose. We don't get angry because somebody does something. We get angry because what we make it mean. And so you have an event, and then you have your thought about the event, and then you have your emotion. So if I go in and see one of my employees, okay, which I'm not a big fan of. I don't like the term employees. I like team member. But if I see someone that is on my team not doing anything or goofing around, I'm not angry at them goofing around. I'm angry at what I make that mean. And so we are meaning making machines, and we create meaning in all the world around us. And so the emotion is not, you know, often I'll hear parents say, I'm so angry my kid's lazy. And I'll say, no, you're not. They're like, no, I'm so angry my kid's lazy. I'm like, no, you're not. You're angry because you're holding on to this idea, this belief, this sentence in your head that my kid shouldn't be. And it's not that my kid's lazy. It's because my kid shouldn't be lazy. And here's the thing. if my emotion is tied to the events that are going on in my life, I have to change the events to feel at peace. But when my emotions are tied to my thoughts about the events, then I can be at peace without anyone else in this world changing anything. And so if I turn to my team and say, well, this has to get done or I'm going to be frustrated, that leaves my frustration completely in their hands. And so when I work with entrepreneurs, they put so much heart and feeling into a situation, and then all of a sudden that situation doesn't go how they anticipate it. Where I come into play is, what are you making that mean? And so when people talk about, you know, they don't want to stand in front of, and I know you work with a lot of people that you help them to stand in front of large groups. It's not that they don't want to stand in front of large groups, is they don't want to feel what that feeling is going to be like if things don't go how they want it to be. Hmm. It's not the standing in front of a group. It's the avoiding a feeling, when in reality, what if things don't go well? What are you making that mean? Well, then I'll feel embarrassed. Well, what's wrong with feeling embarrassed? Like, we put so much energy into, well, I don't want to feel embarrassed. Well, what if you
or fear of failure? No one wants to fail, right?
Huge. And what does that failure even mean? If I go up and give a presentation, when I hear a fear of failure, like, well, fear of failure, what does that mean? Does that mean if I fall, I fail? Does that mean if I stutter, I fail? Like, what does failure even mean? And as an entrepreneur, until we start clarifying what that even means, it's going to be this this monster in our closet. You know, I was talking to a child the other day, and someone had called them spoiled, and they were upset. And I said, what's wrong with being spoiled? I said, I'm spoiled in my relationship with my wife. I'm spoiled. Like, right. And they said, well, if someone calls me spoiled, that means I'm a brat. And so in their head, they made that connection. If someone says you're spoiled, it's I'm a brat. And so we make these connections, excuse me, where if I get up on stage and I forget what I'm going to say, that means I failed. Well, that means you failed. Wait, what are we talking about? Like, what does that even mean? You tried something new and it didn't turn out the way you wanted it to? Help me to understand what your definition of failure means. And so sitting with an entrepreneur, it's going through, what does failure mean? What is that outcome? And you know, you again beautifully talk about in your book of creating that outcome you want and going up to a presentation. But if I don't achieve the outcome I want, what do I make that mean? And in a relationship, you know, if your spouse says something that irritates you, it's easy for us to have these thoughts. Again, the event, our spouse says something we don't agree with, our thought, that's irritating, the emotion, I'm feeling irritated. But I still have to give meaning to what that irritation means. And if I start thinking thoughts of, oh, my spouse shouldn't say things that irritate me, like they're always saying things that irritate me, like I'm giving that power. You know, the moment your spouse says something that irritates you, you have a decision tree. I'm irritated. What does that mean? My spouse said something that irritated me, or they shouldn't have done that. This is, you know, this is frustrating. Versus, you're in a marriage. I just celebrated my 20-year anniversary. And of course we're going to irritate each other. That, like, how do you live 20 years married to someone without irritating them? I irritate myself sometimes.
Right.
And so being able to not give it power and realize, yeah, my spouse just said something irritating. Decision tree, what does it mean? It means this is part of marriage, and I freaking love her. Like, this is part of it. Nothing's wrong here. And that the principle of fight against reality comes into play, to where we live in this world of, it shouldn't be this way. It shouldn't be this way. It shouldn't be this way. I shouldn't have fallen on stage. Right. I should have, you know, we start shooting all over the place and how it should have been. But the reality is what do you make it mean?
Oh, I love that connection that you're making, the meaning that we tie to certain things. You know, on a previous podcast episode, we had Calvin Corelli, the founder of Simplero. And I asked him, I said, Calvin, have you always been driven to be this successful? And he goes, you know what, Chad, with all due respect, I really don't like the word success. And I said, really? What do you mean? He goes, because what is the meaning that you tie to that? And then he gave an example. And he said, for example, his aunt had just written a book, right? And she was so excited about that she had just written this book. And then she had, I believe he said, his mom said, or someone in the family said, really, how many copies has the book sold? Is it successful? And Calvin was like, you know, my relative was just, she felt like success was the fact that she just completed the book. She was so happy about just completing the book. And then the family wanted to immediately tie success to it, meaning, well, how many copies is it sold? How many is it, you know? And he's like, what are you talking about? Like, I wrote a book, whether it sells one or none, I don't care. I feel like I met that accomplishment. And so I love the fact that you bring up the importance of tying. We do tie meaning to things that we just shouldn't do. And going back to the example you shared a moment ago, where an entrepreneur will walk in and see some of the team members messing around, and he will tie meaning to that, or she will tie meaning to that, saying, oh, they don't care about the company. They don't care about our success. And all of a sudden react and get angry and say things that they don't mean, say things they shouldn't say, because they tied meaning there that wasn't real. If you walked back 10 minutes, maybe that person just closed the biggest, you know, the biggest deal they've ever closed for the company.
Yeah.
And they were pumped and they were jumping around and started messing around with each other because they just experienced this tremendous success for that person's company. Mm. But then they came in at that moment to assign meaning to what was happening. And then the outcome just wasn't good.
Well, and the flip side of that coin, when we have that thought, they don't care about this company, especially if you're coming in from, this is my baby, this is my baby.
Right.
When in reality, no, it's not. It's your company that you've created. When I say they don't care about it, the flip coin on that belief is, I believe they should. And it's like, okay, well, what level of care should they? Should they be worried at nighttime when they go home as someone getting a W-2 check? Like, how much care should they have? When in reality, as the owner, you walk in and think, of course, no one cares as much as I do about this. They shouldn't care. I don't want them to care as much. I don't want them to carry on the stress of this. I don't want them to care about my business as much as I do. But that meaning we give it, and it's taking that step back and developing the first level of three awarenesses. In that moment, when you walk in as a business owner and look around and see and have that thought, oh, no one cares, I react instead of respond in that moment. I might say things that I shouldn't have. I walk out. Afterwards, as I thought about that situation, I realized, probably not the most effective way. And I don't like using, did I respond in a good way or bad way? Because there's so much shame that comes with that. I prefer more of effective versus less effective. Wow, I was less effective. The second level of awareness, excuse me, is in the moment. I'm responding to my team in that moment. And I realize, man, I'm a little emotional dysregulated. This isn't going the way I want it to. Like, I'm aware of it while I'm doing it. Level one is looking at your team, feeling it, and not saying anything till you're in a good spot. But we've got to go from level three to level one. And that takes a lot of thought work. That takes time going back to your own office and saying, what about that caused me to be so upset in that moment? What did I make that mean? And a couple of questions I love are, what makes sense about this situation? What makes sense about this situation? And the reality is, you walk into a phone room, you walk into a customer service room, and your team is talking to each other. They need that to stay in good spirits to receive that next phone call.
Right.
And so if you have this idea that they are going to be emotionally healthy by just staying on that phone and having no interaction with each other, it's that interaction between phone calls every so often that actually is going to give them the boost to be more effective on the phone. But going back and saying what makes sense about this situation, I hire team members to man the phones that are outgoing, that enjoy talking to people. If I wanted a team who didn't want to be on the phone or didn't want to interact with people, putting them in the customer service room is probably not the right seat on the bus for them.
Right.
And so of course they're going to. Now, are there times where I need to come in and say, hey, let's wheel it in? Absolutely. But here's the thing. When I walk into that room and think, of course they're doing this. This is what they're supposed to. This makes sense. I'm at more peace. So my actions are, all right, hey, let's come back together. I'm coming from a spot of peace. What is going to be my action? I'm going to be a lot more calm. I'm going to treat them with respect. What's going to be the outcome? We're pushing the needle a little bit further. Let's work harder. However, the other side of it, if I come in angry and irritated, I'm probably going to say something I shouldn't. What's going to be the outcome of that? A borderline hostile environment. You know, you walk into a room and you chastise one of your team members and there's other people there. That impacts the rest of the day.
Oh, absolutely. It absolutely does.
Not only that, but the more as someone that owns their own business, how we interact with each of our team members gives permission to the rest of the team on how to interact with other team members. So if I'm constantly irritated at one team member, the other team members see that. And they realize, oh, now we can kind of be catty with that person too. We can treat them differently. It's the same as when I see in the classroom, and it's the same as I see in the work environment as well.
You know, what you just said there's so much good content, what you just shared. I and those who've listened to previous podcasts know that I often reference a study that was done where they interviewed hundreds of the nation's top CEOs, Larry. And the one characteristic they all had in common was self-awareness, which, as I have shared before, to our audience, that it surprised me. I was surprised that self-awareness, it wasn't drive, it wasn't passion, it was self-awareness. That's what made those CEOs successful, having the ability to be self-aware. And when you just broke that down with the three levels of awareness, that's when you reach that top level of awareness, that's when you become that top leader. That's when you can lead in any organization, whether you own the company or you're a valued leader. Either way, breaking down what you just shared in those three levels of awareness and getting to that top level is crucial.
Well, and it makes you a leader in your home. You come home after a date with your wife and or date with your husband, whoever's out there. And you come home and your four-year-old is drawn permanent marker all over the wall. You look at that, you have to give that meaning. And when you give that meaning of, this makes sense. My four-year-old loves markers. Or, of course they did. But here's the thing. A lot of times we have these thoughts of, now this just created a hassle for me. This just created, when in reality, that's an incredible opportunity for your kid. Man, what an incredible way for them to make that choice, make that mistake, and then learn how to fix it. And to be able to look at that four-year-old and say, wow, look at that. Man, what are you going to do to fix this? What are you going to do to make this right? And when you can look at it to where, man, the more they mess up at an early age, and we call these affordable mistakes, the more we hand that problem back, the more they fix the problem they create while we're emotionally regulated, the more they learn, I can make mistakes, but I can make it right and I can fix it. The problem is when I come in emotionally dysregulated, the child is no longer thinking about the bad choice they made, but what a jerk I am.
Right.
And so all their energy, and it's the same thing if my wife were to come to me and say, you know, your shoes are all over the place. Why are your shoes all over the place? I'm not in a good spot to where, you know what, honey, you're right. I need to do better. No, it's my shoes are all over the place because they're trying to find your clothes that are all over the place. You know, it's a natural response to get defensive in that kind of a situation. So, you know, this big push these past 10, 15 years of turning it positive. I'm not even into that. I'm into just make it neutral. You know, is the glass half full or half empty? I'm okay with it being either or. There's no meaning I'm giving to it. Just is. And when we can take a step back, when we get a flat tire, you know, it just is, without that fight against reality of it shouldn't have been this way. You know, the carpenter that dropped the nail before me shouldn't have been this way. Now, again, this is not an easy thing to do. And this is a lifetime of work on ourselves, but it's doing the things that serve us, and it's holding onto the thoughts that serve us. So even if I do get angry, which I probably would if I got a flat tire, and I look at it, now what? Decision tree. I can be upset. I can be angry. I can blame everyone else, or I can just sit with the emotion of anger. And this is another thing we're not taught growing up. We're taught to avoid emotion, because going back to what you say, you know, people match your energy in 3 or less minutes. When our kids are sad, we feel uncomfortable. Mm. And so we're trying to cheer them up so we can feel comfortable, versus a child feeling sad. And how are you feeling? Oh, I'm sad. Huh? Sometimes I feel sad too. And not make it mean anything other than we're just feeling sad. And so I get that flat tire. I put my hand over my chest and just say, huh, I'm really irritated right now. And the more I can sit and feel that feeling without pushing it away, the sooner the feeling actually goes away on its own. And as I just sit there for a moment, feel the feeling, get curious about it. Where am I feeling it? What, you know, what is it? Where am I feeling it in my body? What does it feel like? What color would I associate with it? The more you just sit there with that emotion, within a minute or two, a lot of times it just goes away. Versus us pushing that away. And so walking into that room, getting irritated, I'm just going to look and say, oh, I forgot what I was going to say. And I'm just going to walk. I'm just going to walk out, go to my office, put my hand over my chest and just, and say, wow, honey, I got really defensive just then. And I don't. Know why. Do you mind if I just get curious with this for a minute or two before we can continue our conversation? And so going back to, you know, these our fellow entrepreneurs, they go out, they have these high hopes for these sales, and we've all have lost. Well, we've never lost sale because it was never our sale to begin with. Okay. But we have this idea of going out and we're going to pick up all this business, and we don't. Going home, whatever I made that mean, I'm now carrying home to my family.
Right.
And so I personally have to sit in my car and think, man, what emotion do I want to take into my home? What emotion do I want to take into my home? And so, you know, entrepreneurs, if we can clear our brain, going back to that phrase of fear of failure to where, and so, you know, entrepreneurs, if we can clear and again, this isn't about being positive, be positive that you marked off the numbers on how many you have to not get before you get. No, it's about neutral. This is part of being an entrepreneur. How did things go today? Kind of sucked. I went out, I made 6 pitches, didn't get any sales, but this is part of what I do.
And TK always says, but it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. We're going to be good. We're going to be good. And he says,
I love it because that added thought to whatever you're thinking is it brings the neutrality there. I said, I don't know if I'm saying that right. Makes it neutral. And you don't even have to get rid of the original thought you have. You just add an additional thought. Man, I didn't get those 6 sales, but it's going to be okay. You know,
it's going to be okay. We're going to be good.
I've heard some people just say, you know, it is what it is, which is, you know, really cliche, but I also love the phrase of it's just an event. It's just an event to just remind us that events don't have meaning, but the meaning we give them.
And that, Larry, that I hope everyone listening will take away huge takeaways from what you've shared today. Been phenomenal. But be careful the meaning we give things, and be aware of how we're feeling. I mean, if everyone listening leaves, Larry, with those two takeaways, be careful the meaning we give things, and then be aware, and specifically jump into those three levels of awareness that you outlined, they will be well served. That is awesome.
And can I throw in one more self-reflection question, Chad?
Sure. Yeah, you bet.
Is what I'm making it mean serving me or not? Is what I'm making it mean serving me or not? And I think that is the litmus test, because I'm not telling people what to think. What I'm telling people is what you think you feel. And is it serving you or is it not serving you?
Oh, I love that. I love that. Because if it's not, then, you know, don't waste your time with it. So,
well, and hence the emotional ownership. I can take ownership of what I may not have created the feeling. I may have woken up feeling horrible, but it's up to me to change that. And that's where that ownership comes from.
I love that. I love that, Larry. It is great being with you. Love what you shared. Larry, if anyone has any questions or anything for you, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Best way is send me a message through my website at parenting.rocks, parenting.rocks.
Larry, you are awesome. Love spending time with you. Take care.
Hey, good to see you, Chad. Thank you.
Bye now.